there's no place like home for the holidays. And no matter how far away you roam, if you pine for the sunshine of a friendly gaze, for the holidays you can.
Welcome back to Horror for the Holidays, a Christmas horror movie podcast. I'm Jay Logsdon.
And I'm Jeff Searcy.
Jeff, I hear it approaching distantly in the background.
I can barely make it out.
Yeah. It's faint. It's very silent. But it's carried on the wind. It's the whatever you call it, the ghost of the wheel or whatever shit.
Yes.
Punishing us with 5 weeks of Halloween movies.
Oh no.
It's going to be, the spooktacular is fast approaching, Jeff.
What is this, some kind of spooktacular?
Yep, but in the meantime, we gotta get through a couple more weeks of Christmas horror movies, and boy, do we have a doozy for this week.
We do.
Not in the bad way.
Not
in a Christmas craft fair massacre, yes, sort of way.
Yes, it's not that, thank God.
But in a interesting movie, low budget, independently made movie, but I'm excited to talk about it.
Indeed, sir.
All right, well, let's deck the halls for December 6th. All right, sorry, for 2016's Good Tidings, released December 6th, 2016.
Good Tidings, you say?
Also, like, Dark Tidings might have been, like, an alternate title.
Indeed. Already committed a cardinal sin, Jay. It's a British killer Santa movie without Simon Phillips.
I was going to say, it's not Simon Phillips, so you got to do more of, like, a Scouse accent, which I cannot do. I
can do a London accent there, Jeff.
Kind of, but I can't really do a Scouse accent.
You can't, can you?
That's almost Scottish.
Indeed, it is.
I can't even picture like a Scouser, someone from Liverpool, to like emulate. Like, we're almost. Oh, it's good tidings, yeah. There we go. That's kind of gotta get a little nasally.
I was gonna say, talk like Ringo. That's probably as close as you're gonna get. On the fifth Beatle.
There, I saw somewhere that Purple Aki is in this movie. I did not see, like, I didn't see him listed anywhere, but that is like a British boogeyman sort of thing. And it was like a guy who would, like, I don't know the full story. I'm not British, but it's like a weird guy who would, like, wear like a purple tracksuit and I don't know, like, go around and feel people's muscles or something like that.
Uh-huh.
And it kind of was the inspiration, I think, for Candyman.
Okay.
Which, I mean, I guess, like, watch out, a purple lackey won't get you.
Oh, no.
I don't know. Anyway. Written and directed by Stuart W. Badford. Writers also include Giovanni Gentile and Stu Jopia.
Two Stus.
And Stu Jopia is friends with one Mr. Mike Lombardo.
Oh, really?
That's why I have a copy of Good Tidings on Blu-ray.
Oh.
Mike had posted something about it and tagged Stu in it on Facebook. And so I reached out to him and I'm like, hey, I'm friends with Mike. He posted that he has a Blu-ray copy of your movie. Could I get a copy of it? And so I sent him, like, I don't know, £20 or something like that.
£20?
And got a copy of the movie.
Highway robbery.
Writers Stu Jopia and Giovanni Gentile and composer Liam W. Ashcroft play our killer Santas Curly, Larry, and Mo.
Yes, the Three Stooges. And honestly, I think Stu's Santa gives the best performance.
Yep, he's the big, intimidating, terrifying looking one.
Oh, I thought he was the one with the candy cane.
No, I think he's the
big terrifying one. I thought was Giovanni.
No, I don't know. It's hard to say, but I thought Curly was the big one, was the impression I got.
Moe, if they're going by actual Three Stooges logic, Moe should be the big one.
That's fair. I don't know. It's hard to say. We need to. They should have instead labeled them like Big Santa, Candy Cane Santa, and
Moe is the third tallest, Santa. Tallest Santa. Curly's the fattest Santa, but he's also the most goofy. So I don't know.
Well, I all I know is Stu is Curly, Giovanni is Larry, and Liam is Moe.
That's what I thought when he was doing his like capering thing. I thought that was supposed to be like a Curly impression.
Oh, okay. Also, Alan. Mulhall, there we go, is Sam Baker, our lead.
Oh boy. I'll just call him British Diehard.
According to Matt Dupay's book, an 11,000 pound budget. And they knew they wanted to make a movie, and when they saw the courthouse, they were offered the courthouse as a place to shoot this movie, this abandoned courthouse, they went, okay, yeah, no, we're making this movie. We're using this courthouse, this abandoned building. And I think all the better for it. I think if I would have seen that, I would have been like, yeah, I'd make a movie with that.
Yeah, I saw estimates were ranging between, I guess, converting British to American money, depends on the year, but $9,000 to $11,000. And then adding in the marketing costs is about a total budget of $20,000.
Tagline, Christmas can be killer, which is... kind of, which in a Black Christmas 2006 sort of way, they constantly bring that up. Like, I think they say that line or a variation of that line, similar to like the Black Christmas, like, you're my family now, I'm your family now, we're all family now.
So, like, another famous franchise that is focused on family, Jay.
we get the like, Christmas can be killer for people like us, or stuff like that. Constant, like in the first, I don't know, 30 minutes of the movie, I think that said like four times.
Mm-hmm. It was shot in just 18 days. I did see that. So that requires some filmmaking talent and organization to pull that off. I know that Stuart Bedford said that he was kind of doing it as like a love letter to the 70s and 80s exploitation movies, which I can see.
Yep.
I would just wish they'd used modern audio recording instead of recording from the 70s. But we'll get to that later.
Where to watch? Streaming free, currently on Tubi. I think probably some other places, certainly.
That's where I watched it, yes.
Like I said, maybe try to find a way to get out to Two-Headed Snake or I don't know, contact Stoogopia on Facebook and see if he'll send you a copy. personal experience, I had actually, when we were initially compiling this list, this was one of the ones that popped up, and I was really intrigued. I was like, that one looks like a lot of fun, and had never gotten around to watching it, and then it wasn't until, like I said, Mike had posted something about it that I was like, oh yeah, I should get a Blu-ray copy of that movie.
Okay, so Curly is Stoogopia, Larry is Giovanni, and Moe is Liam.
Yep. Now... do we know which Santa that corresponds to?
Yes, Curly is the one that's capering around that spares the woman the longest. Moe is the Santa that's the angry mid-sized Santa, and then yes, Larry is the giant Santa.
All right. Well, I might have names wrong in the movie. It doesn't matter.
Yes. There.
I'll also just refer to them as Big Santa, Candy Cane Santa, and other Santa.
But yes, Larry Santa's played by Giovanni. Let me see. I really need to just label him in the movie.
That's the thing. Even if like they don't get those names, even if at one point like Sam was like, oh, we got Curly Moe and Larry over here, and like they start referring to them by those code names.
It would have been nice at least once for them to have their names put out there or whatever. Yeah, that would have been helpful.
Although I understand why they didn't in the.
Well, I mean, they did. They had time for it, Jay, which we'll get to later.
Yeah, you're a good point. You ready to dive in?
I think so.
All right. We get a quote from Ben Franklin
about
Christmas or something. You know, famous British man Ben Franklin.
Yes. I thought that was very interesting that they chose a quote from an American founding father.
Literally, I was like, Ben Franklin? I thought this was a British movie.
Someone who couldn't have been more in opposition to Britain.
We fought a whole war about this.
I mean, he's famous for loving the French, and you can't get more anti-British than that.
We see a guy wearing Santa pants and a tank top stumble out of his house. He's carrying a bottle of liquor of some kind that he proceeds to drop while trying to take a piss.
Yes.
And also while trying to take a piss, forgets to pull his pants up, so he's showing ass.
Yeah.
The camera then follows him across his yard to a car, and he goes to the trunk. I'm sorry, this is British.
The boot.
He goes to the boot and pulls out a Santa jacket, and when he closes the lid of the boot, we see a guy in a hospital gown with a bag over his head. Think chuckle. Jason in Friday the 13th Part 2.
And they begin their maniacal chuckling, which is all they will do for the entire movie.
And he's carrying a shovel. As he approaches, like, the driver, well, it would be the passenger side for us Americans, but it's the driver's side in England.
In backwards land.
Yeah. He gets confronted by two smaller guys. Face is all bandaged up. If you ever, I think, did you ever play the computer game Sanitarium?
I did.
Kind of reminiscent of that, I thought.
Or, the guy from New Vegas, Joshua Graham, he sprang to my mind. He's all bandaged up like that for some of our younger listeners.
Yeah. they start laughing and then the baghead guy like walks up, knocks him down and then decapitates him with the shovel. And opens the boot.
He opens the boot, and luckily he had three more Santa costumes in there.
And then he laughs. Title card. Good tidings. Just like that. we see two homeless men talking. One of them mentions that the dumpsters never have any good food in them on Christmas Day, and that Christmas can be killer.
Indeed. Don't worry, Jay. They don't bother to introduce each other, so it doesn't matter who they are. We're going to head to the shelter now.
One man, who we will later learn his name, Sam, feeds the other man, who we will later learn his name to John, and says that there is a group of them squatting somewhere, and after a bit of, like, back and forth, a bit of abrasiveness on both parts, Sam agrees to take John with him to the place where they're all squatting.
Now, this is my first question, Jay. Why does John grab the offered food like he's a hungry raccoon?
That's a good question.
I know he's supposed to be homeless, but he doesn't have to act like an animal.
We briefly cut back to the three killers, now all wearing Santa suits with creepy masks, and they pass around the head of the man they decapitated.
As you do.
And then the largest one places it on top of the reindeer decoration outside the guy's house and creepily laughs. Sam and the other two and Sam and John arrive at a disused courthouse, and after a secret knock.
Yes. Second question, why does the courthouse have a sliding metal door like it's like an abandoned warehouse or something?
Hard to say.
Is that how courtrooms are set up in England?
Must be, because it was a real courthouse, I believe.
Yes, it definitely was. I saw that, yeah. And second of all, they're saying this place is up for sale but hasn't been bought yet. So why isn't the power on?
That's a good question. They get let in, and then we also get a scene a la the original Halloween, where as they're like standing talking to each other, walking up the courthouse steps, we see the three Santas drive by.
Yes,
in the car.
I instantly thought of Michael Myers. Yes, when I saw that.
A lot of like homages.
Little nods. Yeah. If you know what you're looking for, listen, mate. I know all them movies.
Me too.
You're trying.
Inside the courthouse, we are introduced to Mona, her husband Paul.
Paul.
Who's on some form of medication.
He's on his tablet all the damn time. Bloody hell.
I literally, my brain was not like set in British mode. And I went, Paul and his fucking tablet. Always has to have his tablet.
Where's my tablet?
Like, fucking tablet adult Paul. Always.
Disgusting.
And then I was like, oh, they're talking about medication.
Yes.
We meet Roxy, who's a recovering drug addict, and we learn that Sam went AWOL from the army.
Yes, and apparently no one's bothered to look for him. That's a good thing this isn't set in the United States, because he would have been captured and executed by now.
That's the British military for you. That's why they lost in 1776, Jeff.
It's great. And it will commence again. They try to take our fire.
Sam talks about being a failure. And Roxy says, you saved us all, and maybe one day I'll return the favor. Foreshadowing.
I'm sure that won't come back later. And also, apparently the reason he's homeless is because his daughter was kidnapped and his wife left him. And so that made him decide to not want to be a soldier anymore. Interesting, but okay.
Yep. Sam goes and he gets a gramophone out of like a storage area in a lockup part of the courthouse. And we are introduced to Val and Marcus. Marcus is the guy who got the generator running in the courthouse or whatever.
And Marcus also dates the movie by saying, "Oi, mate, don't you know it's 2016?
I have that line for Christmas carols. Everyone eats, and Sam gets some music going on the gramophone, and they open up Christmas crackers and have like a party in the big courtroom.
Very good neighbors. I like
this. While the Santas break in. And then they chain the door shut behind them as like a creepy version of Carol of the Bells starts to play. And hats off to them. Not like the creepy, like Krampus Carol of the Bells or any of the other, or not like, I think there's an artist Mew who does like creepy, like minor key Christmas music, like their own creepy Carol of the Bells. I really appreciated that.
This is like some industrial house music kind of thing. It worked very well for what it was doing.
John, still not understanding Sam and everyone else's generosity, kind of grills Sam on why, on like why this is all happening and why he's doing all this. And Sam basically tells him to like liven up because, you know, tomorrow it's not going to be Christmas Day and people probably aren't going to be as nice.
Don't look a gift horse in the mouth, mate.
And while that's good, we also watch the Santas kind of walk through the building and set up traps. John then leaves to like go get a drink, and he passes a guy who the camera then immediately switches to following.
Yes.
And we follow this guy out into like the hallway.
It's never a good sign when you're in a horror movie, by the way.
Yeah, the camera suddenly starts tracking you.
Why is the camera following me? No.
And he walks to his tent or whatever set up in the hall, and we see like one of the Santas walk out. Yes. Candy Cane Santa, as we'll refer to him.
This brings me to another question, Jay. Why are you pitching a tarp tent inside a building? Instead of just going to a room and claiming that as your space.
Good question. He turns around and he sees Candy Cane Santa standing there, and he like kind of taunts him a bit, and he's like, "Oh, is that you? I don't know, Jeff."
Yeah,
and
he's like, "You, Jeff?
Jeff, you stupid fuck!
You stupid fat bastard!"
And Candy Cane Santa takes the candy cane out and stabs him in the eyes with it.
Oof! I wish we could have seen it. That would have
made. And then he takes the bloody candy cane and puts it back in his mouth.
Yes, lick.
Inside the party, Sam gets up to switch the music over on the gramophone, and we see the three Santas all walk in through different doors. Everyone's kind of laughing about it and having a good time. Oh, who's dressed up like Santa? And then the killing starts.
Well, I mean, they're laughing about it, but when these guys walk in, especially the giant one, Larry, it's like, holy shit, these guys are the most menacing people they've ever seen, and they're just all like, ha ha ha, look what's happening to us.
And that's the thing. Listener, it needs to be said, these aren't just like guys in Santa suits. They've also got like these terrifying masks.
Yes, they've got like white-faced monkey masks, all a little bit different, which I appreciated. They all have their own little unique flair to them. These look like, I mean, like orcs from the Lord of the Rings, essentially just walked in and you're like, haha, what a funny Christmas prank, everyone. Wielding weapons.
Oh, yes, and they're also like, one's carrying a machete, one's carrying an axe. Yes. And I think one's carrying a club.
And I was like, this didn't set off our veteran to be like, oh shit, maybe something's wrong. Until somebody gets chopped up. And then he's like, oh shit. It's not a Christmas prank after all.
It's one of those Christmas pranks where three creepy Santas walk in.
Jay, haven't you been to that town where three orc Santas walk in and kill somebody on Christmas?
It's a classic tradition. People start fleeing. Sam, Mona, and Paul get separated from the rest of the group, and they head down to the holding cells. We get a great moment where, like, the other group, like, the larger group kind of split off, and they're running for the exit at the front of the building, just to discover that the doors are chained shut, and they're able to get the door open and scream for help, but they can't actually, like...
You know, see, this is a moment where I would have been like, why? It would have been cool if they had seen somebody outside or whatever, and then they'd just been like, oh, whatever, it's just homeless assholes, and walked off. Or, like, another thing could have been, like, none of these people have a phone. I mean, I know they give out phones to the homeless everywhere. It's like, they could have, like, called the... It would have been a lot cooler if they called the cops. The cops would be like, yeah, we're not coming out here. It's right. Christmas, dude. A fun prank or whatever.
We then, as they're, like, screaming for help, we watch the two of the Santas, Candy Cane Santa and Third Santa.
Third Santa.
Both walk to the top of the stairs, and they kind of stare down at them. And then everyone turns around, sees this. They run back up the stairs. They don't get attacked. And instead, like, the two Santas just... walk past each other and each chase like a different group. Instead of like turning and like running towards the groups that like ran past them, they like almost switch the groups off. I thought that was a really neat kind of moment.
They had aggro, Jay. Everybody knows you can't break aggro.
Sam's group makes it to the holding cell, and while Mona's trying to lock the door, Sam like tells her to move. Like he's like, Mona, you need to move.
Move.
Mona, move. And then he's like, Mona, move. And then she's like, I got the door locked. And then you just watch a hand reach through the cell bars and start choking her as the largest Santa starts like, starts choking her. Sam's able to fight him off. But the Santa just kind of laughs and walks away. And then Paul has an episode and Mona has to give him CPR.
My tablet. No.
And Mona says, we're going to die in here. And Sam kind of gives her a pep talk.
Mona, I need my tablet.
Mona, I forgot to take my tablets.
I haven't watched Peppa Pig in at least 10 minutes. I'm going to die.
I've got to know what Granddad Dog's up to.
I want to be treated like royalty, like Daddy Pig.
Roxy, John, and another person hide like under a windowsill.
Yes.
And we get like this great moment. And it's like kind of like... not frosted glass, but it is like kind of like a privacy glass.
It's that kind of privacy glass. I'm assuming it's like for people who are looking at suspects or something.
And we see like the Santa kind of walking, and the other guy in there kind of freaks out and leaves. And we just get this great moment where we like the camera pans back up and we watch him like try to escape just to get murdered by the Santa that's standing right there. And then we get like the Santa like with blood on his glove, just like smear it on the window. I thought that was such a great moment.
Yeah, a lot of people criticize the camera work in this movie. That's something I saw a lot, but I really don't see it. I thought it was pretty good.
No, I thought there was some real, really great like eye for detail and like attention for detail in this movie. And just like unique shots and stuff like that. Mm. The Santa then kind of bursts in and attacks John and Roxy. They're like, I think Roxy briefly thinks she's like escaped just to get knocked out by like the Santa's machete. Yes.
Oh, Santa.
And then we cut to like her legs and she's just being like dragged out of the frame. Sam, now out of the cell, finds the corpse of the guy who got candy caned in the eye. And he hears someone in another room and sneaks in. It's in the courthouse and watches a lady who's tied to a chair. She sees Sam and yells, please, and then gets a lead pipe shoved through her head.
Ouch.
Sam then hears like the shaking of a spray paint can and the Santa leaves. And when he comes down, it says, good tidings we bring, is spray painted onto like the wall.
Jay, he said the thing.
Yep.
He painted the thing.
Sam then pulls the pipe out of her head and we get some real goopy like brain matter sliding out of the pipe.
Yes, I wish that. Obviously, they knew what they were doing with the effects, so I wish they would have showed more of it.
Sam finds one of the guys, Reggie, who is pretty badly cut up but alive, and says he's going to take him to the cells with Paul and Mona. And then Reggie's like, no, survival of the fittest, mate. Like, Paul's not going to make it. You know, we need to get out for ourselves.
Yes.
And...
oh, really? Are you the fittest, is you? How about you try a pipe to the face?
Yeah. After Sam kind of, like, gives him like, a real tearing down, Reggie's then like, why are they doing this? And Sam says, it's Christmas Day, and we're their toys.
Oh, no.
Roxy comes in to a room where Candy Cane Santa is like playing with a Jack in the Box and has like a little like Fisher Price like cassette tape set.
Whimsical Santa.
That plays Christmas music. She has her hands tied and she sees Val with her mouth taped shut, and John are also in the room with her as hostages. Roxy taunts the Santa, but he just kind of laughs at her and starts humming "We Wish You a Merry Christmas." And she starts to sing along with it, and that gets him to like calm down and kind of sit next to her, and he like rests his head on her shoulder as she sings, and she sees that he has a pair of keys hanging from his belt, and she tries to get him, but just then Giant Santa bursts in, grabs Val, and just picks her up off the ground, and fireman carries her out of the room.
He also pushes Whimsical Santa to the ground.
Yep. They've got the three Santas, like, although they're working together, clearly have like an adversarial relationship.
Yes, he busts in, and if he could talk, I'm sure he would have done something like, "What the fuck's going on here, then?"
John comes to, screams for help, gets taunted by Candy Cane Santa, and then immediately pisses himself.
"Where am I? What's going on?" It's like, what do you think's going on, you nut? Man, this is why John is homeless. He forgets everything every time he sleeps.
That might make sense. That might make sense why later on he betrays the whole group. Doesn't remember how nice they were to him.
Curse your sudden yet inevitable betrayal, John.
Sam and Reggie make their way down a corridor, and we see... and they kind of find themselves sandwiched between two of the Santas. One kind of walks out of one end of the hallway, and the other one like walks out behind them. And Reggie just goes, "I'm out of here," and like bolts for a door, and then immediately gets hit with like a trap in the face and dies.
No, Reggie, wait.
Too late.
Both the Santas leave, but Sam chases after the large one and challenges him to a fight.
And at this point, I'm like, what the hell are you doing? This guy is like more than a head taller than you and twice your size and width.
It'd be like me picking a fight with Jeff.
"Come here, Jeff. I'll give you what for."
And he like charges at him and then immediately gets sprayed in the face with a fire extinguisher by the other Santa, and then gets it slammed into his face, knocking him out.
Oof.
Sam comes to facing a wall with North Pole and South Pole spray painted on the wall, pointing in opposite directions, and he goes towards North Pole.
Yes. See, this is another big question I have, Jay, in my series of questions. What was the point of making him ex-military? Because he does nothing in this movie that a normal person couldn't do.
I mean, it's a good point. Maybe that's how he learned the one MMA move that he pulls out later.
Well,
in the
then
movie.
He taps like he's at a pro wrestling match or something. Well, hey, I mean, at least Larry, he takes the tap. He walks off.
Sam finds Val zip-tied to a chair with homemade explosives and a 1 minute, 30-second counter. Sam can't save her and basically has accepted that they're both going to explode.
Yes, I love how he just like, well, we're going to die.
And then when it hits zero, it just laughs and plays "Hark the Herald Angels Sing."
It was a very Jurassic Park moment. You should have said the magic word.
Sam gets Val untied, and they hear screaming and find Marcus hanged with the Herald Angel painted on the wall behind him.
Somebody should really hark to that.
Hark that Herald. In the cells, Paul and Mona agree to go and get his tablets.
Oh, God, no. First, Paul puts on a big show of production about how he's going to go get his own tablets because he's a stupid failure, waste of space, and he's not going to let his wife pay for his mistakes again.
He's like, "Mona, go get my tablet." And she's like, "No." And then he's like, "But I can't find it." And she's like, "Have you looked in your bedroom?" And he's like, "No." He's like, "Yes." And then she's like, "If I go look in your bedroom and find it, I'm going to be pretty disappointed." He's like, "Fine, I'll go look in my bedroom." Yes.
And then he was like, even though he knew tablet time was over, he asked for 15 more minutes because he started a long video.
Yep.
And then she was like, "Paul, you should have known that it was bedtime."
And he's like, "But I gotta get to that song in that episode of The Loud House that I wanted to watch.
I've got to play more Roblox." I don't know about that, kids.
I've got 30 minutes. I know we have to leave, but I've got to beat this boss, and it's going to take me 30 minutes.
Of course. But yes, he needs his tablets.
He needs his tablet. So they decide to go together. They find a bunch of corpses in the courthouse, in the courtroom.
Of course.
And what they don't realize is that there's also one of the Santas in there.
Oh, no.
And Paul's able to get his tablet and get Peppa Pig running on it.
Ah, yes, finally.
Watch a little Caillou.
He's able to, his heart rate is substantially lowered once he gets his tablet back.
But then Silent Night gets put on the gramophone, and they turn around to see the Santa standing there holding a machete.
Menacingly.
And Mona begs to be let go, and the Santa kind of lets them run off. But then as the song finishes, he looks at the machete and then just follows after them. And then off camera, we hear Mona scream no, and then we hear a squelching noise and a thud.
Again, I really wish we could have seen that happen. But I like him. Good guy Santa. He gives him a chance. Yep. He gave him a head start. And he let him take his tablet.
So there yeah. you go.
He's like, I understand.
He's like, I know you have those downloads of Paw Patrol that you wanted to watch, Paul.
So, yeah, I think overall he's a pretty nice guy.
We aren't left to wonder for long what happened as the room that Roxy and John are in, Santa brings Mona in, and then out of his Santa sack falls Paul's head
yes.
into her lap. She starts, like, screaming, and the Santa reaches into his pocket and holds up mistletoe above her head and makes Mona kiss her husband's decapitated head.
That's what I'm talking about.
That was more a great moment.
Yes, more of that.
One of the Santas chases the other one off, and then Mona and Roxy try to formulate how to get out of here, and John just complains.
Yes.
And then in walks the giant Santa, who takes John and hauls him out of the room.
Oh, giant Santa, let me serve you, master.
Yep. Essentially, John begs giant Santa for help and says he'll betray the others for his own safety. And Santa cuts him free. And John goes, I'm one of you now.
And Santa goes,
hee hee ho ho ho.
Ooh.
They're coming to take me away, ha-ha. They're coming to take me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, to the funny farm.
Exactly.
John finds Sam and Val saying he killed the giant Santa, but Sam smells a rat almost immediately and demands to see the body.
Because it's fucking John. And if the ex-military guy can't kill giant Santa, something tells me John's not going to be able to handle it.
They go and find him, and Sam immediately notices that there's no blood while Val just taunts the corpse. And the large Santa just stands up and snaps her neck. Sam elbows John in the face and immediately knocks him out.
Oh, no.
And then charges the giant Santa, who knocks him to the ground and, like, dislocates his arm.
Yes, because what did you think was going to happen?
Sam is able to get to a knife, but the giant Santa has grabbed an axe, and as he lifts it above his head to bring down on Sam, Sam stabs him in the knee.
Ow.
Santa screams in pain. And Sam then stands up and punches him in the face.
Again, run away, especially now that he's been hobbled, run away.
And then is able to make it out of the room. John comes to and sees the large Santa, and then Machete Santa walks in. And John asks, did we get him? And Machete Santa closes the door, and then we hear John scream.
Oh, no. Well, this is what happens. You made a deal with one Santa, Jay, not all of them.
Back with Mona and Roxy, Candy Cane Santa has wrapped some presents for them, and
he just wants to have a good time.
Yeah, he makes them play Pass the Parcel.
Pass it.
Like it's an episode of Bluey. I want to play Pass the Parcel.
Oh, boy.
But Mona doesn't want to participate, which makes Santa really upset. Santa eventually makes her play, and when Mona opens the present, she finds Paul's tablets.
I don't want to pass the parcel. Too bloody bad.
I thought it was so funny that it was that, like, oh, here's your present. It's the thing you wanted.
Yeah, obviously. Hey, see, he was paying attention. He felt bad for her, so he found the tablets.
With the distraction of Mona basically screaming, Roxy has found a pair of scissors and stabs the Santa in the eye with them.
Ouch.
And then hits him over the head with his own club.
Oof.
They get untied, get the keys, and then Mona kicks him in the dick.
Ooh.
And says, Merry fucking Christmas.
Boy, that's rough, mate. That's rough.
Turns out the keys don't work to the locks on the front doors.
Classic.
And all three, they kind of like turn around to run up the stairs, and all three Santas in various states of like being injured are kind of standing there.
Oh.
Mona runs up the stairs, punches one of the Santas in the face,
yeah.
grabs the club, starts clubbing one of the other Santas, and then Giant Santa just walks up behind her and like puts her in a chokehold.
And she clubs the Santa way too long and just never turns around and bothers to look at Giant Santa.
While Roxy's like yelling to watch out.
She's like, watch out, look out behind you, and Giant Santa is approaching at the most leisurely pace I've ever seen.
And then Roxy like apologizes and runs off.
Yep.
Roxy runs into Sam. Turns out his arm... originally, I thought his arm was broken. It's just dislocated.
My shoulder's fucked, mate.
Roxy says she has something for the pain and goes and gets some methadone she has stashed because she was a drug addict.
Mm-hmm.
Sam then tells her... takes some, pops it back in, and tells Roxy that she can take it if she wants. And he ambiguously, like, leaves her. Mm. She does not take the drugs.
Oh, no. She should have.
They hear Mona scream and decide to go to get her.
Oh, that Mona is moaning about something.
We see Mona tied up and Candy Cane Santa, who, like, stabs the candy cane into her leg and then breaks it off.
Nice.
And the gramophone plays, God rest ye merry gentlemen.
God, yes, ye merry
gentlemen. God, yes. In walk the other two Santas, and Giant Santa stabs her with the machete.
Of course, yes.
Sam then like calls them out, like, "Oi, you want to have some?
Come and have a go if you think you're hard enough."
And so the three Santas chase after him, so Roxy can sneak in there. But there's no saving Mona, who's been stabbed with the machete.
Oof.
And Roxy promises that she'll avenge her death, and then pulls the machete out.
I shall avenge ye.
Sam is able to split the three Santas up and then gets the jump on Giant Santa, who quickly overpowers him.
Again, okay, you split the Santas up and you choose to go after the one that you have been confirmed to never be able to defeat, no matter what you do.
And we get a great scene where like the Santa's like on top of him and is getting ready to like gouge his eyes out with his thumbs, but Sam's able to like bite one of his thumbs.
Yep. Oh, don't forget he taps, Jay.
And then
I'm tapping.
And then is able to get the Giant Santa in a triangle choke, and eventually the Santa starts moving. Stops moving.
He'll do that in a minute.
And then Sam kind of crawls into a corner and passes out. Roxy finds Sam, wakes him up, and Sam is barely able to walk and can't really get to the cells.
Really should have fought one of those other two Santas, yeah. Huh?
So they try to barricade themselves in a closet.
You know,
the operative
word. Giant Santa might have been one you would take on together. Maybe solo one of the other Santas.
Or with a weapon.
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be good too. Nah, we'll put him in the rear naked choke, Jay. We got this.
Sam knows that he's dying and tells Roxy to go on without him, so she leaves through some access tunnels that were at the back of this closet for some reason.
Oh, he says it very early on in the movie, in case you forgot, and all the riveting action that happened between Jay. He talks about access tunnels going down under the building and up to the roof.
The two remaining Santas find Giant Santa's body, and they fight over his axe for a while.
Yeah.
I assume this is to decide who will be the new leader. Yes,
obviously, Jay, the Alpha is dead. We must decide who is the new Alpha Santa.
They then go searching for Sam and Roxy and eventually find the barricaded door. They're able to push the barricade aside together. They didn't do a very good job barricading the door.
If
the two small Santas could push it open.
Rough work.
One of them knocks Sam out with the butt of the axe and sends Candy Cane Santa to go chasing after Roxy through the tunnels.
Bad choice. He's already been shown to be affectionate towards her.
Yep. Roxy arrives at the roof, but the Santa is chasing closely behind her. She finds herself cornered and gives the Santa a "we're not so different, you and I" kind of speech.
And he goes,
And then takes her hand and leads her to a ladder that is the exit to the roof. And she's like, "You're letting me go? Why?" Doesn't say anything, because these Santas never say anything.
He's mute. Yeah.
And then she goes, "What about Sam?" And he laughs and starts to walk away. But Roxy starts to sing "Away in a Manger," which causes the Santa, which we know loves Christmas music.
Obviously, he's triggered by music.
Yeah. Turns around and kind of walks and lays down next to her. And as Roxy is finishing the song, starts stabbing the Santa repeatedly, like in the throat.
Yes.
Sam wakes up in the courtroom, and the remaining Santa is sitting at the judge's podium. I loved the scene, was holding like a beer bottle as the gavel, and then when Sam wakes up, just tosses it behind him.
You know what this reminded me of? The scene in Batman Arkham City where Two-Face is holding the trial for Batman after he's been captured.
Yes. And it's, yeah, the jury is all these dead homeless people. Sam is kind of able to escape and fight off the Santa briefly.
If only he hadn't been horribly maimed by fighting Giant Santa three times for no reason.
But yeah, he's pretty beat to hell. So Santa quickly catches up with him and strangles him with Christmas lights. Would have liked the lights to have been plugged
in. Yes, that would have been cool, but I appreciate the effort.
Yep. Roxy walks out, saves Sam, and then machetes the Santa's head off.
Finally.
Roxy and Sam walk out into the streets, and the camera starts going through the courthouse at all the carnage. You know, we pass by the dead bodies in the jury box. We pass by Mona's dead body, and we get a great shot where then it goes down the gramophone horn or whatever. We pass by dead Santa on the roof, decapitated Santa in the hallway, and then we get to the room where Giant Santa was killed, and he's not there.
Mm-hmm.
And then we cut to him walking out onto the street.
Yes. I was like, you really think you choked out Giant Santa? Give me a fucking break.
Title card again. Credits roll. End of movie.
And sadly, it doesn't seem like we'll ever get a sequel.
Yep. Granted, I don't know where you go from here.
Oh, I know exactly where you go from here. So,
Giant Santa follows them to a hospital.
They go to a hospital, and that's where you can set up that Giant Santa is still obsessed with them and following them.
And maybe Giant Santa is like one of their brothers.
And then have it be that he goes back to the military because his trauma has been solved now. He rejoins the military. It's like 20 years later, and he's retired now. And Giant Santa finds him in his home and starts terrorizing his new family and his new daughter.
I would love that. That would be great. Like, gets a call from Roxy. They haven't talked. They haven't talked really since he went back to the military. Right. And he gets a call from Roxy, and he's like, what's wrong? And she's like, I think I'm being followed. Mm-hmm. And he's like, we'll get here. And then Roxy never shows up because she gets murdered by Giant Santa. Yes.
He never hears from her, so he goes to like her apartment in the city or whatever, and she's just butchered inside there.
Yep.
And then maybe he leaves a good tidings on like her window or something.
Good tidings, like, too.
Oh, God, it's starting again.
Yep.
Oh, geez, mate. We's fucked, ain't we? Turns out John wasn't dead either.
Oh, shit. John's back, too. God damn it. All right, Jeff, you need to start writing the script. Send it to...
Yes, we're getting this. We'll give it to Mike, and he can forward it on for us.
Yep.
Mike gets it. Trash.
I mean, I assume that's what he does with most of the stuff we send him.
Yeah.
All right, what category do you want to start off with?
Let's talk about the Christmas spirit, Jay.
All right, how Christmassy is the movie? How Christmassy are the kills?
Is a mixed bag, I would say. Because the location is not all that Christmassy, except for the one Christmas tree we see.
Yep.
But the music is very Christmassy.
I love the soundtracks. Shout out to the people who did that. It's unique. It's different. And like I said, it's not just finding the same like public domain like Mew soundtrack that's just like Christmas in like a minor chord. It's their own thing. A
large number of people were hating on the soundtrack online, and I'm like, hey, even if you don't like it, you could at least appreciate the fact that they tried to do something unique with the soundtrack.
No, like, this isn't I thought this was like very Christmas. This was Christmassy for what they had. This isn't like a Christmas, you know, this isn't certainly like a White Doomsday.
No.
But this isn't like a Christmas Evil or a...
American Scream.
I'd say this is more American Scream level. This isn't like a Christmas Evil or a Letters to Satan Claus or a Black Christmas 06. This is more like a... Yes.
American Scream.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's Christmas. Everybody knows it's Christmas. But, I mean, honestly, they probably could have done some more decorations and stuff around the courthouse. But, I mean, you get the point. It's all Christmas-themed.
But I really think the soundtrack brings it home. But
yes, I was going to say, the soundtrack does a lot of the Christmas-heavy lifting in this. And obviously, the three killer Santas,
too. The kills.
Yeah.
Honestly, Jeff, I don't know. These might be my new favorite killer Santas. Yeah. These might be the top of my list.
They've got a lot of good kills. I just wish less of them had been off-screen, I would say.
But like Christmas wise, you get an axe.
Yes.
You get a
candy cane.
You get the candy cane, which man, we, as much as I love like a stabbing a candy cane at somebody, you got, that's not gonna do anything to anybody, is it?
I mean, maybe if you got it like just the right angle, maybe through like the roof of the mouth, you could punch it up real hard and do some damage. I don't think it would kill him,
right?
And just have bleeding profusely out of the mouth.
Like, I think you could stab somebody in the eye with it, which yeah. he does.
Yes, you could do that.
But I don't know that you could like stab somebody repeatedly no. with a candy cane no. and do anything.
That was, I was like, there's no way that would break on the first stab,
right?
I mean, like I said, I'm sure it would hurt like a bitch to get stabbed with a candy cane, but that would be like a thing that would work one time, and I don't think it would be fatal.
And the strangling with the Christmas lights, although yes. I wish, like I said, I wish they were turned on yes. during that fight. I thought that would have been
cool. Yeah.
And I think would have looked better. I as I've said a couple times before on this show, I love the look of like lit Christmas lights yes. being used as a weapon. And I think that would have been really cool to have in Silent Night, Deadly Night, mm-hmm. when he strangles the fucking pervert dude, like the lights are on when he does it.
Yes. Which I mean, and by that point there were battery operated Christmas lights. So it would have been really simple to do it.
Yeah.
So,
but
I wish they had been on, yeah.
But yeah,
I mean, it adds, I'd say overall, if you factor in the soundtrack and the kills and the fact that there's not one, but three killer Santas running around, I'd say this score is like on the medium to high end of Christmas spirit.
Kind of on that. Let's move directly into Christmas wrapping, sets, designs, costumes, effects, etc. I mean,
the set, well, yes, it is obviously a courthouse, and they had a real courthouse to film in. I thought it worked well for what they did. Lots of tight spaces, and then there's a few big open rooms you can do the bigger scenes in.
I can see why when the team that made this movie saw this courthouse that was offered to them,
perfect.
They were like, this is perfect, because it is perfect.
Yes, it's perfect for a slasher movie. It's pretty much tailor-made for the kind of scenes and kills you want to set up.
I honestly think these are... These Santa outfits, especially with the masks, these are yes. creepy as hell.
Yes, the masks are great.
And there's something about the cheapness of the costumes,
yes.
like that actually in a Santa Claus CLAWS, mm-hmm. you don't get that.
No.
But with this one, I feel like it's so like it works for yes. this.
I think the certified insane person, literally right out of the mental asylum, in a dime store Santa costume, kind of works better than if one titular Santa killer is your like main focus. I think then you need a higher quality suit.
No, I agree.
But yeah, with the three of them running around in dime store Santa suits, and you know they just found this in a guy's trunk or boot.
Yep.
You know that's just something they picked up off the street. I think it works.
I would say solid gore effects, although, like you yeah. said, they cut away from a lot they of them.
Cut away from a lot, and I wish... I mean, everybody knows how to do the homemade gore recipes. I mean, if you got a grandma, you could go get her Karo syrup and stuff and make up some decent fake blood.
Like, there is one scene where it's obvious that, like, the intestines are just yeah. sausages.
Yes, I was like, they could have done a few things, I think, to make a... I'm guessing it was because it was shot in 18 days, they probably just had to go, and not really have time to do, but I wish maybe if they'd had a couple extra days to shoot, they could have done some of those effects a little bit higher quality.
But like I said the pipe through the head yes. and like then when he pulls it out and then you just watch like the goopy brain matter mm-hmm. spill out. Well, I thought that was great.
Yes, the like I said, it's good when you get to see it and when it's not rushed, like yeah, the sausage link intestines or whatever. Yep. Yes, it's like that's kind of one of the things that was kind of moving it up and down for me because I saw like the pipe through the head scene looks so good, but then you got some of the other scenes that look so cheap.
And I mean, and on that, the machete looks like something that we sell at yes. like Spirit Halloween.
That's I was like, I'm pretty sure I have that machete in my old room closet at my parents' house.
Yep. Maybe like the axe did appear to have some heft to it.
Yeah, but I think it was probably one of those rubber axes you can get that's for more quote unquote realistic Halloween prop type things like yep. your haunted houses and stuff. But you could tell, especially when they're fighting over it, that it was bouncing like rubber on the ground.
Yep. Anything else for Christmas wrapping?
I thought they did a good job of making people look homeless. Because they're not, people usually overdo it in movies where it's like literal a guy walking around in rags or whatever.
Right.
And it's like, that's not what most homeless people look like.
No, it's just kind of the clothes and they have left.
They got whatever leftover clothes. And they look kind of old and faded and worn out. I don't know if you noticed, but we had a Merry Christmas, You Filthy Animal t-shirt.
I did catch that.
So I appreciated that little touch too.
Christmas carols. Let's do favorite quotes.
Oh boy.
I mean, Jeff, you've said your favorite quote multiple times already.
Yeah, I did put that maniacal laughter because that's all the Santas do. Well, that's not true. Nicer Santa does hum along to the tune that she's singing, but other than that, it's mostly maniacal laughter.
So I've got Sam. There's nothing good on Christmas Day. Or maybe it was John. There's nothing good on Christmas Day. Christmas is a killer, which is the tagline. And like I said, is then said three other times in like the opening 30 minutes of the movie.
Paul, did you take your tablets? Yes, I took them. You don't have to remind me all the time. That won't come back later.
Nice gramophone. You are aware it's 2016, right, Marcus?
I had that one.
Sam, I'm hoping Santa brings me one of them or MP3 players.
Which, again, it's 2016. You don't want an MP3 player in 2016.
Yeah, get an iPhone. Yeah. Yeah.
Gee, I hope Santa brings me an iPhone.
And then my last one is Reggie. Why are they doing this to us? Sam, it's Christmas Day, and we're their toys.
I don't know, Jay, if you've ever seen the amazing comedy with Mark Strong and Sacha Baron Cohen called The Brothers Grimsby.
I'm aware of it. I don't think I've seen it.
But if you've not, you should watch it. But I know this isn't his exact line, but this is exactly what went through my mind when he challenges the three Santas in The Brothers Grimsby. Sacha Baron Cohen's thin, useless character challenges a mercenary to a fight and says, "Come and have a go if you think you're hard enough." And that's exactly the energy I got from him challenging the three Santas. Like, come on, then, and get some.
It's a real. I think that's like a soccer chant. Like,
it's like he literally, this exact same thing happens in both movies. He gets his ass kicked.
Come on, have a go if you think you're hard enough. Immediately gets his head stomped in.
Immediately gets shit pushed in.
All right. Well, Jeff, broken bulb, brilliant bulb. One thing you want to fix, one thing you want to praise.
Well, Jay, there's one thing I would like to fix, but I can't really decide if that's what I want to fix or not. My broken bulb was the sound. Come on, sound guy. Get that. I saw the shadow of the boom mic like four times in the movie. Get that thing down there so we can hear what's being said. There's some scenes, especially when there's like action going on or there's music playing, where the dialogue level is so low, you really got to strain to hear what's going on. And as someone reminded us, Jay, it's 2016, so there's really no excuse for bad audio. So come on, guys, let's get it together. But other than that, because that's more of a technical nitpick than an actual problem that you could fix.
And I think you could do that for a fix.
But my actual fix was, I don't think this movie needs to be an hour and 40 minutes. There's portions of this movie that really feel unnecessary and kind of drag along, especially the escape at the end. They really drag that out way longer than necessary. I think if you had made this like a tight, because we've seen it before, make this like an 80-minute movie. I mean, you still sell it as a feature. I mean, lots of people do. But I think trimming that extra 20 minutes off that it really didn't need would have helped the pacing quite a bit.
It's one of those... I don't remember what movies like we've... Christmas Bloody Christmas was the one. It's one of those where, like, if you keep more people alive longer... Yes,
it could have been more interesting.
You can keep... Yeah, yes. You can keep people's attention longer in the movie.
Yes, for an hour and 40-minute movie, they front-loaded way too many kills.
And so then it's like Mona, Sam, and Roxy for like the last 30 minutes. And you're just like...
Almost the last 45 minutes is just them.
And you're just kind of like, can we get this over with?
Not only does it hurt the pacing and the interest of the audience, it hurts your villains because it's like, it just makes the villains look incompetent that they can't kill these people.
Or and if you have cool, unique kills you want to do, there are tons of people in this homeless camp. Just show them getting murdered
exactly
in various ways and not have your main characters. Yes,
that's what I was going to say. It's like, there's all these people around at the beginning that they just unceremoniously kill off quickly. So they could have the main people run around the courthouse. But it's like, yeah, leave a few more of those people alive.
Yep. Yeah. My broken bulb, honestly, it's another one of those. Does a bigger budget fix a lot of the problems with this movie? Probably.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we see some real crap made for a lot more money than this.
Yes.
And this is I mean, I'm kind of going to give away my whole thing here. This is a pretty good movie for what we got.
Yeah.
And it's one of those where it's like, you know, if they had 100,000 pounds to work with instead of,
or, you know,
10,000 pounds,
if they'd been able to hook up with somebody like Jason Blum, who could have gave them a couple million pounds,
right,
to make the movie.
Like, yeah, I think you fix a lot of the nitpicks that we have.
Yes, it's like, yeah, a lot of the problems with the movie are due to the budget. Like I said, some of them could have been ironed out with better pacing and stuff. But, you know, a lot of the things that I criticize are just, I think, budgetary things like off-screen kills and things like that.
Yep.
And just having to shoot the movie in 18 days, obviously, if you had a bigger budget, you could have taken more time.
Yep. And but, you know, we've seen some trash that has huge budgets, and you're like, why does this get? Yeah,
could you imagine if this had had the 13 or 14 million that they wasted on M3GAN 2?
Right. No, it's
a disappointing movie of the year.
Yeah, once again, people want original ideas. This is you know, this isn't original insofar as it's a killer Santa, but this is a different take on the idea.
It's a group of homeless people being terrorized in an enclosed space by three psycho killer Santas. I'm pretty sure Jason Blum would fund this movie.
Right.
I'm 99% sure if they had pitched this to him or whatever, if he'd been active at that time like he is now, this would have been a Blumhouse movie.
Brilliant Bulb. Thing you want to praise.
The Santas. This has got to be some of the best kills and the best killer Santas we've seen. This is rivaling our most cherished killer Santas, like our Simon Phillips.
Yep. I was thinking, I was like, you got Simon Phillips, you got Bill Goldberg,
yep,
you got Harry Standling, mm-hmm, as kind of our three. I think those are our kind of pinnacle,
yes,
of like killer Santas. I mean, I know I like Robot Santa.
Yes.
Yes. But like, man, these three guys, I am right there with you. My Brilliant Bulb. These three guys are amazing.
They were hands down the best part of the movie. I loved their mask design. Their cheap suits work perfectly, like we talked about before. Lots of creative kills. They all have their own personalities, which was great. Because usually when it's a psycho killer or whatever, you get one of them and it's the same. It's Jason, it's Freddy, it's all of them. It's the same guy, you know, carbon copied. But these all have their own unique little quirks. And I really, because it's like they're not just mindless killers either, because even the big giant lug Santa that you expect to just be, you know, unstrategic and a hulking monster, he uses John as bait or whatever. He goes with the trap idea. It's like, obviously there's something going on up there.
No, like for in a genre that we will get more killer Santas, mm-hmm, we will get worse killer Santa. I mean, I was comparing this, which I know it's kind of apples to oranges. You compare this to like Christmas Blood, a movie we did last year that was also a European, mm-hmm, killer Santa movie, and how much we were just like unimpressed with the majority of that movie.
Oh yeah.
And like this movie, these killer Santas just stand out, while that killer Santa was just ho-hum, another mm-hmm.
Yes, very generic, very like wannabe Billy pretty much.
Yep. And this one is they all stand out. They're all different. And I'm going to be thinking about these three killer Santas.
No,
you know, a year from now, 2 years from now, like they are certainly at the top of our list. Killer Santa wise.
Well, it's like, even because of the pacing of the movie or whatever, I was getting kind of bored by the end. But when I saw that, I was completely re-energized when I saw that large Santa was still alive and was on the loose again.
No, I think it would be. I do think there is a potential for a sequel to this.
Honestly, you know, because since he has shown that he is not just mindless or whatever, a sequel could honestly be him recovering the two other masks and recruiting two new Santas to be like his henchmen. Because obviously he was the leader, even though it was like an uneasy alliance.
Right.
But obviously might makes right when you're killer Santas. And he could like start terrorizing them again or whatever with two new psychos. Or maybe they have like their own objectives or whatever, and he gets roped into that.
Agreed. I think there's a lot of directions they could go if they wanted to make a sequel. But no,
I mean, just the mask design alone, I would hate to see these masks only be used in one movie. Because, I mean, that's an iconic kind of mask that I would like buy at Spirit Halloween. If I could get my hands on one of those, I would totally buy it.
No, it's really good. Another one we'll get is the 2012 Silent Night. It's kind of a Silent Night, Deadly Night remake, but it is, but it isn't. And that one has an equally, I think, creepy mask in a different way with their Santa costume.
Cool.
And so that's one that like also stands out in my head, but I'm like, I think I like these ones more.
But no, overall, I would say that, yeah, I think you're right. A bigger budget probably would have solved a lot of the issues that they had.
All right, well, let's, we're kind of talking about it anyway. Final rating. Every episode of Horror for the Holidays, we rate our Christmas horror movie on one of three categories. Is it ho-ho-ho-larious? Is it seasonally scary? Or is it you'll be sorry?
It's seasonally scary for me. Nothing scares me pretty much at this point. I've seen so many things. Apparently Jay and I are just psychologically predisposed to not care about blood and gore because like we feel nothing when we see Terrifier, when people say that's the bloodiest, most disgusting thing right. I've ever seen. And we're like, it was Thursday. But anyway, I think that the very fact that they cut off a woman's husband's head and hang mistletoe and make her kiss her decapitated husband's head elevates this into seasonally scary for me. I could see anybody, if you're sensitive to gore or sensitive to especially like terror or anxiety, I think this movie would be very unsettling for you.
No, I'm right there with you. I think this is seasonally scary for the budget. You know, once again, not all seasonally scary movies are created equally.
That's very true too. Yes. You got to take the movies as they come. You can't be comparing everything to everything else or you're just never going to rate anything good.
Cause like, you know, is this a 10 out of 10 in the same way that like I would put the 1974 Black Christmas at a 10 out of 10? No, but on its own merits, like, yeah, there's weird, you know, there's the sound issues. There's, you know, there's the fact that we don't get to see the kills because you've got to hide your budgetary constraints any way you can.
One of the things that makes this a seasonally scary and not a you'll be sorry for me is that there are no fundamental flaws in this movie. Everything that's in this movie that's wrong could be corrected in like a sequel or a remake or whatever. There's nothing that was done in this movie that was just fundamentally wrong like a lot of the other movies we see.
No, yeah, it's like I said, it's just one that if you throw money at it, you would make this movie would just get better.
This, if they do a big, like if Blumhouse were to say, "All right, we're doing a $5 million remake of Good Tidings," it would blow up huge.
Yep.
If they just did literally the exact same movie again, but with that budget.
Which I know companies have done. There's that a couple of years ago there was like a, I want to say it's called like Last Shift.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And they remade it as Malum, but it's essentially like the exact same film, just with a better budget.
No, there's definitely precedent for it, and like I said, this would be the perfect candidate for that because there's no flaw in this movie that couldn't be corrected with more time or more money. Because
like are there continuity errors a handful? Yeah, but like, you don't care when everything else you're seeing looks good and looks creepy. And I
mean, there's continuity mistakes and sound mistakes and stuff in movies that have a much higher budget than this.
Exactly. So. You can't nitpick any of that stuff. Or can you, I guess?
I mean, you can. You could do whatever you want. This is America, Jay.
True, you're right.
Not communist England, like is portrayed in this movie.
You're right. Maybe we're getting close for Christmas.
But yes, you can, Jay. You definitely can nitpick this movie.
You can, but...
Should you?
Should you?
No, probably not.
1 out of 10, Bad Tidings.
Classic.
What an absolute pile of garbage this is. Cheap, corny synth dance music that bellows out every time there's an action scene. Some of the worst dialogue I've ever heard in a horror film. Poor acting. I actually thought all the actors were pretty decent. One woman overacts so badly that it becomes a major distraction. Characters that do some of the dumbest things you'll ever see in a movie. Literally the people who do the dumb things get killed for them. Because they're panicking and they're freaking out and they're, you know.
But I mean, if you're going to go by that logic, then all horror movies are bad because everybody does stupid things in horror movies.
There must be over 20 deaths in the film and you don't see any of them bar one at the end. All you get is close up of someone's face or a cheap cutaway followed by a thump noise. I almost read that as a thumb noise.
It's a thumb noise.
And then you see the supposed victim with a bit of blood on their face or a rubber accessory glued to their body. I don't think it's that bad. People who are supposed to be dead, yet they're blatantly moving or breathing. Fight scenes that are so badly choreographed that it feels like you are watching two kids fight over a lollipop. Once again, I mean, they're doing their best for 10,000 pounds.
Yes, first of all, It doesn't look that bad.
No, it really doesn't.
It looks more realistic than a movie fight, I would say.
Victims that are exactly that. Seriously, not one character bar the main dude can fight, attack, or defend themselves.
He can't either. That's
beside the point. They pretty much just lay down and say, "Here you go, stick a knife in my chest." Chest off camera, of course. I don't mind. There are so many scenes of the killers staring at up close at the victim's face and then tilting their head back and forth, and these scenes go on forever. They just heavy breathe and laugh like Muttley the dog for no reason.
That's true. They do that.
It really is uncomfortable and not in a good way to watch. Editing that is ridiculously amateurish, and the list of gripes is endless. This is obviously a micro-budget horror film made in or around Liverpool, but it's just so poorly made that all it makes you do is slap your forehead and roll your eyes every few minutes. Yes, the Santa outfits are pretty cheap, and the idea is okay for a horror film. So why'd you give it 1 out of 10?
Again,
if you recognize all these things, why'd you give it 1 out of 10?
So basically the review he's describing is this movie should be like a 3 or a 4 out of 10, but he's made it a 1 out of 10.
But that's about all I can say positive about what I just sat through. Seriously, avoid this Christmas turkey at all costs. It won't even please the so bad it's good crowd because it isn't even laugh worthy. It's just an embarrassing and uncomfortable watch. Disagree. The scene where he makes her kiss her decapitated husband's head was hilarious.
One thing I will note that I do agree with him on is there are some very weird editing choices in this movie, which again I think probably could have been fixed with a higher budget and more time. But the weird black wipes all the time, like we're going to commercial, really threw me off. I actually looked this up and was like, was this made for TV?
Oh, and spoiler, you never get to see the killers' faces, nor do you ever find out who they are or what their motivations are. No backstory, no explanation when they even came from or why they chose to break into this place where the killing spree happens. It's one of those films where the killers are there for one reason, to bump off the cast. It's just a shame you never actually get to see any of the cast get killed. Terrible film.
I mean, you're describing the origin of 90% of horror movie villains.
Right.
There are things that are just kind of there. But, I mean, you do know where they come from. Obviously, they escape from somewhere because they're all in matching outfits when they kill Santa. And then they take his car. And then the first group of people they encounter in the city, they decide to murder because they're crazy.
No, I think the subtext of this movie is about how hard Christmas is on the homeless population and on like the mentally handicapped population.
Anybody who doesn't have a good connection to family, I think, is the main theme.
And you get this movie, and then they keep saying Christmas can be killer. Well, yeah, no shit.
Yes, I have often heard that this Christmas is one of the hardest times of the year for people who are depressed or who are alienated from their family. I mean, obviously, you've been seeing a lot of that lately, especially in America with the political divisions in America. People are like, my kids don't talk to me anymore.
Yep.
Now I'm lonely and sad at Thanksgiving and Christmas. And it's like, well, but I mean, that's the main theme this movie is addressing. I agree with you. It's like, yes, it's hard to be alone, especially if you're in as disadvantaged of a position as being homeless at Christmas time.
I just don't understand giving this a 1 out of 10. It's one of those where I almost want to go and you know, you and I have kind of even said this in the past. Like, we rate these movies based off of how we feel about them.
Yeah.
You and I have never made a feature length film. I don't know that we ever will.
Oh, we might, Jimmy.
We might. But it's one thing to sit and criticize, but boy, I'd like to see you make something this good for $10,000.
Yeah. I mean,
I guarantee they couldn't.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to make that a bar for criticism because obviously, most critics are not going to be able to criticize anything.
Right.
But yes, when you're picking apart something that was obviously done, it was like, you know, I'm sure you looked up or whatever what the budget of this movie was.
They did. I think they said what it was.
It's obviously a micro-budget horror movie or whatever. So it's like, so why are you treating it like it's a mainstream, like full production horror movie?
Why are you giving this like the same attention that you would a Blumhouse film? Yes,
it's like, if you didn't like it, that's fine. But even within your own review, it's not a 1-star or a 1 out of 10 movie, just based on your own review. It's like, there are things you like about it. So by definition, that means it can't be the lowest rating.
Right.
But it's like, The only thing that I've seen recently that I would even put a 1 out of 10 on, because, I mean, I'd even give, like, Krampus versus Bigfoot a 2 out of 10, just for, like, the ridiculous bullshit right. that's in it. Christmas Craft Fair Massacre, I think, is a legitimate 1 out of 10.
Yes.
Because it's just not a real movie.
No, it's not a movie at all.
All right, Jay. Good Tidings is the cinematic equivalent of a stale mince pie left rotting in the gutter. It masquerades as an homage to 70s and 80s exploitation, but lacks the subversive bite or stylistic bravado of the film it apes. And then it puts parentheses apes. It's funny because the Santa masks look like apes. The lighting, drenched in forced red and green, looks more like a Spirit Halloween catalog shoot than a Carpenter-esque mood building. The so-called silent Santas are not menacing, just tedious. Like watching three pub lads fail a mime class. And the social commentary about homelessness, handled with all the nuance of a sledgehammer dipped in fake blood. This isn't Grindhouse, it's landfill. 1 out of 10.
3 out of 10. I would have loved to have been more generous.
Ah. Well, then why weren't you?
Then why weren't you?
Was somebody holding a gun to your head while you were reviewing this?
I would have loved to have been more generous, but I really could not give this more than 3 stars. In spite of the apparently being made with a budget of only £15,000, and with the fine allegorical undertone of Christmas being cruel to the poor, I have to be honest and cannot rate it higher. The whole homage to exploitation and slasher movie of decades gone by simply does not work. The acting and the special effects were decidedly dodgy, and at times I felt like I was watching a home movie. I mean, that's kind of what indie horror movies are a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. Of course, I feel a little bit guilty by not offering a little bit more praise. So why don't you? Why? But I also feel I must be honest. And after all, what can one expect for £15,000? Once again, I would ask you. What can one expect for a pretty good movie, by all accounts.
I'll give him credit. At least he gave it a 3 out of 10 and not a 1.
Right.
So it's like, obviously, there was stuff he liked about it.
But I don't know. I thought that was so weird. But I'd like to give more praise than do.
There are things you could praise him.
Yeah. You, in fact, you've literally not really praised any of those things.
Bruh. This review literally starts, bruh.
Awesome.
Bruh, I love Christmas slashers. I'll even defend Silent Night, Deadly Night Part 2, like a creature from the Black Lagoon-style monster. But this is like three blokes got drunk at the pub, bought Poundland Santa suits, I'm assuming that's like their version of Dollar Tree.
Yeah, that's their version of Dollar Tree.
And decided they could be Michael Myers. They shuffle around like hungover mall Santas, while the victims deliver dialogue so wooden you could carve it into my reindeer statue out front. The gore looks like jam smeared on Play-Doh. The courthouse setting, I've seen scarier office holiday parties. I wanted blood-soaked Yuletide mayhem. What I got was 95 minutes of my life I'll never get back. And now Christmas is ruined forever. 0 stars.
I mean, it's not. You're once again, things like Christmas Craft Fair, man. Come on.
Yeah. I don't see. That's the thing, Jay. I don't think these people have seen The American Scream or Trapped Alive or Christmas Craft Fair Massacre.
Krampus the Christmas Devil.
Yes, Krampus the Christmas Devil, Barricade, you know, things like that. Although, like I said, I knew this would happen eventually. Barricade is starting to move above, I think, the bottom tier.
No, it really is.
The basement and the sub-basement are starting to get so full it's had to move up to the regular basement, Jay.
As it as the sub-basement floods, it starts pushing things.
Floating on a tide of diarrhea out of the muck.
Barricade floating on a tide of diarrhea.
Yep.
There's just your like, cover quote.
Just like Vince wanted.
God damn. That sounds amazing. I just got one question for you. What's a barricade?
Have you seen my mustache and my bad plastic surgery?
I have.
God damn.
Got another one?
No, I'm all done. I mean, okay. I could do another Vince McMahon thing.
Go ahead, do that, yeah.
What's a burrito?
If Dickens wrote a horror story, it would reveal society's indifference to the poor with gothic subtlety and acting pathos. Good Tiding attempts this, but comes off like an undergraduate's term paper written after binge-watching Grindhouse trailers. Its homeless protagonists are cardboard archetypes, reduced to easy sentimentality before being slaughtered in unremarkable fashion. I'll have to disagree with you. Some of them were remarkable fashion. You just didn't get to see a lot of it.
Yep.
The three mute Santas could have embodied consumerist horror, which, once again, they're not mute, really. They laugh. And he hums.
Like, that's the thing. would I have liked, you know, either them be silent or they talk or something, or even like one or two of them talk.
I think it would have been creepier to have the two smaller Santas never talk and have the big one talk, but only like very sparingly.
Yep.
Like, it would have been cool if he had said, "We bring good tidings," or something like that.
Yep.
But yes.
And then you have, like, the small one laugh.
Yeah.
And then the other one just is silent the whole time.
Yes, silent. And he was the angriest, so that would fit.
Yep.
Okay, so they lumber through the scenes like pantomime villains. Even the score is straining for Carpenter-esque dread, but it collapses into parody. Well, it's a good thing they didn't achieve Carpenter levels, Jay, because he's a hack, remember? what could have been a biting allegory is instead a gaudy blood stain on the season of goodwill. 1 star.
Disagree, but
and the final one. What the hell did I just watch? Three idiots in pound shop Santa costumes stomping around like they've soiled themselves for 85 goddamn minutes. I don't think you finished the movie.
The only one who soiled himself was John.
This ain't horror. It's a fucking Christmas pageant run by lunatics. The kills look like someone threw cranberry sauce at the wall. The acting, I've seen better performances at middle school nativity plays. And don't get me started on the homelessness crisis commentary, mate. Don't lecture me on your social issues when your movie looks like it was filmed in the back room of a Greg's. I'm assuming that's a low-class establishment.
I know Greg's sausages are supposed to be really good. That's the only thing I know about Greg's.
Yes, it's G-R-E-double-G-S.
I think it's like a 7-Eleven. British listeners, write in. What's Greg's?
What the fuck is a Greg's?
I think it's a 7-Eleven.
And why is it bad to be filmed in the back room of it?
I don't know. That's the thing. I've heard people love Greg's, so I don't know.
I'd rather staple mistletoe to me eyelids and then go meet me gran than slog through this cinematic pile of reindeer droppings again. 0 stars, a lump of coal would have been more entertaining.
What, man, every time we watch a movie and we're like, man, that's really impressive. Like, for a low budget movie, that's really impressive. And then it's just criticism after criticism after criticism. And it's like, do people just not watch anything? Like, is this the only low budget movie you've ever watched?
I think it's the online criticism culture that has done this to everything. Literally anything that comes out, there'll be a group of people who are like, hey, that was really good, and there'll be a group of people who are like, that was the worst fucking thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And then you've got normal people like us in the middle, where we're like, it's flawed, but we could definitely see there's some good in this thing. But no, see, that's not good enough anymore. Either it has to be the best thing ever, or it's the worst thing ever. Like I said, we talked about this before.
Yep.
There's no room left for the mid-card movie.
Yep.
There's nothing that's just okay anymore.
But sometimes you just want an okay movie.
It's like, and that's the vast majority of movies are just okay. Not everything is going to be a classic, and not everything is going to be utter dog shit. Like, those used to be special.
Well, Jeff, We've kind of already talked about it, I'm sure. Where do we want to put our three killer Santas on our naughty list?
They got to be higher up on our list, I would say.
Maybe like just below Simon?
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm pretty sure Simon could take a seat. Now, if Simon Phillips fought these guys and he said, come and have a go if you think you're odd enough, mate, I'd believe him.
Yep. Simon's character is supposed to be ex-military, and he like creates improvised explosives.
Yes. I mean, he's good. He's actually good at fighting, which is what you would think an ex-military guy would be. But
murders a bunch of FBI agents and shit.
Yes. And has like a supernatural ability to disappear from situations where he might die.
Yep.
But yeah, no, I'd say probably right under him, because I can't think of any other people in our killer Santa category that could beat these three.
No, I really can't. Like, there's The only one who maybe comes close, and it's both mask wise and I would say movie wise, is the Silent Night remake from like 2012 or whatever.
That he might be able to give, but if all three of them are together, no way.
No, yeah. So no, I agree. I think yeah, we put them just below
old Simon. The only one who could possibly challenge him would be old Simon Phillips.
Nick Ian something Conway.
Our vampire slash apparently what's he gonna be next?
I think also a vampire again.
Oh, they're vampires again?
Yes.
I was hoping for werewolves.
That's why it's Saturday Bite Fever.
Oh, I was hoping for werewolves, but we'll see.
All right. Well, Jeff, it's time for a little bit of this.
Garbage day.
Huh?
No.
Oh no. He's reaching for something. Don't do it. Oh, God. He's going to start laughing maniacally, isn't he?
Maruchan ramen, hot and spicy chicken Funyuns.
Okay. I don't know if this is going to be good, but we'll try.
Me neither.
They smell interesting. I'll say that.
We also got Chicago-style hot dog chips from Local Style.
Local Style, eh?
And then, to wash it all down, I don't know, their kettle cook. You get a little bit of pickle smell. I don't know that you get much Chicago dog.
Not getting Chicago dog, but yeah, we'll see.
And then, wash it all down. We got three different liquid deaths to try.
Oh, no.
We got Pina Colada.
Oh, boy. Will my thirst be murdered?
We've got Cereal Criminal.
Oh, no.
Which is Fruity Pebbles flavored.
Yeah, I was going to say, I instantly could tell what that is.
And the one I've been most excited about, Deathberry Inferno. I believe it is ghost pepper flavored.
Oh, no. All right, well, it's been nice knowing you, audience. Why do we do this? No one's making us do this.
You're right. But, Jeff, if we wanted to stop doing this, people need to write emails, horrorfortheholidays@gmail.com.
Stop, you bastard. Stop. We're not going to listen, but you could try.
And I'm going to try a couple chips first.
All right. I'll do the same. Not really getting hot dog. More like a slightly relish and pickle flavored chip.
That's a damn good potato chip.
Yeah.
I'm not getting Chicago style hot dog.
No.
The greatest thing to come from the city of Chicago. The shitty of
Chicago. Yes, the shitty. I think you got that right.
All right, shit. Let's start with Deathberry Inferno. That way, if we need a different flavor, we can.
All right. Nobody signed up for this. Oh boy.
Oh my gosh.
Woo. Come and have a go. We think you're hot enough.
Whoa. There's a little bit of heat to that.
Why have you done this to me?
It's delicious. It is also spicy.
My throat is on fire, Jay. What have you done to me?
I don't know how to deal with that. I think it actually tastes really good, but it is also hot.
I don't know. I just don't know about that.
All right, let's, grab some Funyuns or something.
Funyuns, I guess. I don't know that they taste like chicken ramen, but they don't taste bad.
Compare that to, some of the, weird flavored food stuff we got, chip-wise earlier this year. Mm-hmm. This is way better than any of that.
Yeah, not bad. I'm not really that big of a Funyuns fan to begin with, but the seasoning blend on this is pretty good. It's kind of almost like a chili powder and teriyaki mix, so it's a...
Yeah, maybe a little bit of chicken bouillon or something. I got another drink of Deathberry Inferno.
I think I'm going to try Pina Colada.
Whoa! All right, let's do some Pina Colada.
Here we go. Down to Hatchton.
It smells like pineapple, kind of. Tastes like pineapple.
Yeah.
Tastes like a pina colada.
Tastes like pineapple Fanta.
If you like pina coladas, or listen to Horror for the Holidays.
Yeah, Jay, don't worry. When you get to that restaurant, it's just going to be your wife.
Right to me and escape. Write to us so we don't have to eat more crap, yes, but we exactly. will anyway.
Write to Jeff Searcy at horrorfortheholidays.com so he doesn't have to drink any more Deathberry Inferno or Pina Colada.
Mm. All right, let's try this Fruity Pebbles one.
Let's do it. This was the one I'm most hopeful for. A Fruity Pebbles flavored drink. It sounds like it has potential.
This one instantly smells like Sprite to me.
Yeah. Tastes like Sprite too.
I'm getting a little bit of Fruity Pebbles flavor. I'm getting a little bit of that, mixed kind of...
I'm getting a little berry, out of it. Maybe... Honestly, it tastes more like Crunch Berries, I think, than Fruity Pebbles, but okay.
Well, watch out. Watch out, Bon. I think Cap'n Crunch is coming for you.
Uh-oh.
Okay, Fred.
That was pretty good. I endorse these impressions.
Oh, Bon.
Okay, Fred. Et cetera, so on and so forth.
Well, we got breaking news, Jay, to wrap up our segment here.
Okay.
I've been informed that my youngest nephew is now running around the house saying shit over and over again.
Nice.
Which would be his first word.
Hells yeah. Solid.
Solid. Solid. What are you opening over there?
Oh, no, I was just getting another handful of chips.
Oh, thank God. I thought he had a secret third snack he was opening up. I was like, oh, my God, what is this? Ass Blaster 5000? Spiciest chips you could find? This is an unexpected move from Jay Logsdon, because he's usually not a spicy guy.
You know what? No more Ass Blaster 5000 before bed. Okay, maybe just a little bit.
See how this works out later.
God, oh my God.
You know what they say about it burning going down.
All right, well, if you want to save Jeff from having to drink more Deathberry Inferno, send us an email or for the holidays at gmail.com. Get in touch with us on social media. We are at all the places until they start making you provide your driver's license. Yeah. We are at Horror4Holidays. That's horror, the number 4 holidays.
YouTube.com/horrorfortheholidays. Hit the subscribe button. Hit the bell so you get updated. Leave us comments. Go to the podcatchers. 5 stars, 0 stars if you could, so we know you're actually a sicko pervert who watches and listens to the show. To get around the real ID requirement, I'm going to be doing what the people in England have been doing and taking photos off of Google Image and using that for their ID photo.
Brilliant.
Because the AI they're using can't tell the difference between photos of you and just a photo of any random person.
It's going to be like, verify that you're over 18, and I'm going to like post a picture of Gary Oldman.
As Winston Churchill from Darkest Hour? That would be
And then they're going to be like, I don't think you're 18. I don't get it. God damn it. It's literally in my name. I'm Gary Oldman.
Yes, he's literally. You know what, Jay? I like that Gary Oldman as an actor, but his British accent is terrible.
Didn't he? He's the one who had to relearn a British accent because he'd been acting in American movies so much. Yep. Oh, boy. Rate us on your podcatcher choice. 5 yep. stars. Write 0 stars if I could, mm-hmm. so we know. Blah 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 blah. So on and so forth. Tell a friend. That's the best way to spread the word about the podcast.
We're on the Christmas Podcast Network. Check them out. We got friends over there like Totally Rad Christmas. What's that other one we always talk about?
There's all Seasons Eating.
Yes, that's the one I was thinking of. Seasons Eating.
There's Rose Such a Clatter. There's all sorts of good stuff.
There's if you go over there and click on any show but ours, you won't be disappointed.
Closer to Christmas, yep. Holly Jolly, Xmasu, all sorts of good stuff. Stuff that's better than ours. Yes, what are you doing listening to this shit?
What
podcast?
You're gonna want to do is go to the Christmas Podcast Network and click on anything not labeled Horror for the Holidays.
Yeah, you're gonna
have a good time.
Yeah, you're gonna have a good time. other than that, I don't know. We'll be
Spooktacular's ramping up. We're coming for it.
We're gonna be spooktacularing, and we will be making an appearance at a Crypticon Minneapolis. Not like a scheduled appearance. We're gonna be hanging out at Matt Dupay's booth.
We're gonna be haunting that area.
Yep.
They don't know it yet, but we're coming.
Yep. Matt's gonna be real disappointed when two fat guys walk in.
If you're listening to this, Matt, I just don't want to shock you. So I'll start off telling you that I'm only 400 pounds. And we'll work our way up to the real total as we get closer to the date. I didn't want to alarm you.
And then I'm going to try something new. We'll see how it works out. I'm going to try to record on our way there, like use the voice memo feature on the iPhone.
Yeah.
And kind of like do, so the sound quality might not be the best. I mean, man, people who listen to Horror for the Holidays.
that's what they're here for. They're sickos for real.
they're crazy about the high fidelity sound that comes out of my shitty sound editing techniques. But anyway, we're going to try that and see if maybe we can post a little something of our travails up in Minneapolis.
Indeed.
An interview with Matt and talk about other fun stuff and whatnot. Anyways, we'll see you next week for a stocking stuffer.
Dun, dun, dun.
And then 2 weeks with another movie of some sort.
Oh, no.
All right. Thanks for listening.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.